Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My guest is old friend Judith Quoba. Judith will talk to us today about Burkina Faso, what's going on in that West African country, all the different players involved in the machinations there. Of course, France and Russia is involved. There's a lot at stake there, more than just the mineral resources, which include gold and uranium. There's a lot going on. So without any further ado, Judith, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, James. As an old proverb in Africa says, when the music changes, so does the dance.
Yes,
and
indeed.
The winds of change are blowing very, very hard at this particular moment in time. Give the audience an idea where we are geographically. So here you have Mali, Niger, not Nigeria. Nigeria is there. And you have Burkina Faso. And these three countries have aligned. And I will talk about ECOWAS and their new alliance that they built, AES, a little bit later. And these are the three gentlemen. This is Assimi Goïta, Mali. This is Abdourahamane Tiani, that is Niger. And today we will concentrate on Burkina Faso and Ibrahim Traoré, simply because he gets all the brunt. And there are reasons for that. Burkina Faso has a longer history of revolutionary military personnel, not really politicians. And all those three countries, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, have a military junta. That is true. Thomas Sankara, he was the first one who really stood up to the current system, and he had similar ideas as Ibrahim Traoré. He was a fighter for true independence of Africa, for using the own resources for the people and not giving it to multinationals. So Thomas Sankara was assassinated in 1987. I will not go deeper into him. If the audience is interested in Thomas Sankara, they can definitely find documentaries on YouTube. It's very easy. Many call Ibrahim Traoré the reincarnation of Thomas Sankara. And here's why. Thomas Sankara was assassinated in 1987. In 1988, Ibrahim Traoré was born. He is a captain in the Burkinabe army. Thomas Sankara was a captain of the Burkinabe army. Traoré became leader of Burkina Faso after the coup at 34. I guess if memory serves, Thomas Sankara at 33. And it's really about the spirit that both men represent. A total decolonization, you could say, because what they say is true. The situation in Burkina Faso is all these former French colonies, they have what is called the CF franc, the currency. And that currency gets issued by France with interest and then sold to Burkina Faso. And of course, like most West African countries, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso were members of ECOWAS. ECOWAS is the Economic Alliance of West African States. But they came to the conclusion that it is useless, that they are not really doing enough in terms of integration, that they are not doing enough in terms of development for the region. So they decided we leave ECOWAS and we will build a new alliance, and that is called AES, Alliance of Sahel States. Yeah, and of course there was a lot of outrage. The other ECOWAS members were not very happy with it, but it didn't stop there. Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso have all kicked out the French troops. No more military operations by French troops are allowed. And Ibrahim Traore pointed out that whenever you let them in, attacks from jihadists surge. So in other words, what he was saying was it is his suspicion that those terrorists and jihadists are actually working together with France. If not, that they get, you know, the funding and everything that goes along with such an operation. And they are planning to have their own currency. That means this currency will be backed by gold. Ibrahim Traore established a treasury deposit bank in Burkina Faso. Just a few numbers. Burkina Faso has 6.5 million metric tons of gold reserves. So, and Niger has very vast reserves of uranium. And now what is really a little bit disturbing, on the 3rd of April, General Langley, at a Senate hearing, he is the head of AFRICOM, accused Ibrahim Traore that he is using all the proceeds of the gold mining for himself and for his cronies. But this time around, Africans are aware what is going on. They have seen that playbook before. Patrice Lumumba, Thomas Sankara, Muammar Gaddafi. And there was a huge, huge outburst. People all over the world came out on 30th of April. The biggest outpour of people, of course, was in Burkina Faso, followed by Ghana. But we also saw people on the streets in Jamaica, in Toronto, New York City, in Berlin, in London, in Paris. And the message was, hands off Burkina Faso, hands off Ibrahim Traore. And by now, I mean, he has been in office since September 22, but he has already survived, I'm not quite sure, either 18 or 19 assassination attempts. And that has to give you some pause how that is possible. So after General Langley said what he said during the Senate hearing, accused him of being a very bad dictator and using all the gold for himself. Nothing could be further from the truth, but anyway, he said it. Yeah, then on 16th of April this year, they issued a travel warning for Burkina Faso. And funny enough, that was also the day when the coup attempt was launched. But thanks to very loyal people in the army, the government was informed. The soldiers that were approached played along, but already reported these coup attempts to the government. And so it was foiled. And yeah, guess what? Where some of the people fled to? Ivory Coast. Last year, Ibrahim Traore made an announcement that Ivory Coast is working together with the United States and with France, that they have a headquarter there where they launch their attacks and where they plan everything to bring down Burkina Faso. And at that moment, a lot of people thought, oh, he's a little bit paranoid right now. Yeah, but guess what? The people who didn't get caught, they all fled over. The intelligence services of Burkina Faso found it out that they fled to Ivory Coast. And there are also reasons for that. We can talk about that later. So why is it that Ibrahim Traore is so beloved? I have no other word for it. Recently, when in Ghana, there was a new president, and Ibrahim Traore was also invited to the inauguration. And there was a huge stadium, and heads of state were announced, and yeah, everybody received applause from the audience. But the second they announced Burkina Faso, Ibrahim Traore, the people went bat crap. That is exceptional. You have the feeling, a lot of Africans want to have him as their president. And I think that is also the reason why he gets the brunt of the hate. Because Mali, Niger do similar things as Burkina Faso does, but they are a little bit, you know, out of the discussion. All the hate is concentrated on Burkina Faso and Ibrahim Traore. So, but here's one thing. When he says that General Langley, when he said he's using all the proceeds for himself, in Burkina Faso, the presidential salary is round about $75,000 per year. And that is a lot of money in Burkina Faso. Might not be a lot in in Western states, but there definitely it is. And he said, no, I don't want to have that salary. I will reinvest it. You will pay me as a captain of the army, because I am a captain in the army. And so that payment is round about $580 per month, and significantly lower than the $25,000. He reinvests that money. He also slashed the salary of the parliamentarians by 30%, but he increased the salary of civil workers by 50%. And because they still have a huge problem with jihadists, especially in the northern part. Because of that, you know, you cannot, I mean, on the one hand, you have to defend your country, but you cannot do the following, you know, every $10 that you take in, you spend $8 on defense. So he came up with the idea to set up a patriotic fund, meaning Burkinabe people can donate their $5, $1, whatever they have. If they feel they can donate something, this money is also being used for the betterment of the country. Do you have any questions so far?
Just a quick point. General Langley, the head of AFRICOM, is a black man. If you ever wanted to look up the word Uncle Tom in the dictionary, you would see a picture of General Langley, and he's blowing smoke about how he needs more intelligence assets, more surveillance, more anti-aircraft defenses, and we'll get into that. So clearly, he's the front man, a black man, who is tasked with essentially taking down Traore, but I'll let you continue.
Yeah. France, of course, is very angry at Ibrahim Traore because, you know, because he is such a charismatic figure, and he is really the one that gets all the attention. And imagine that in Burkina Faso, it's common that people come at night and sleep around his house outside. So in other words, they're saying, you want to touch our president, you have to touch us first. And whenever there are rumors through the grapevine of another coup attempt, I guess by now we had like six coup attempts and several attempts, as I said, on his life. And the Burkinabe people are tired of it. I remember he offered to step down, and because it was clear from the beginning that he is an interim president. And then he suggested we can hold elections. The people came out in big numbers and protested against it and said, no. You stay for 5 years. And then the Western media, you know, the attitude was, yeah, he bribed those people or he forced them to show up. But there is a little problem with that narrative, because also people from Ghana came to Burkina Faso and protested. And so how do you force people from Ghana to come to your country and protest for Ibrahim Traore? It's a little bit... But that is what they are saying. They cannot have it that Africa finally makes the step into independence. And here's the situation that Ibrahim Traore found. Burkina Faso got its independence in the 60s. And when he took over, the country only had 3,000 kilometers of paved roads. So in all these decades, nothing had been done. And now the current government is building 5,000 kilometers per year. And it was very interesting because it was clear to him we need a better infrastructure. And of course, that includes roads. And then when he approached private firms, he found out that they are massively overcharging and that they take almost double the amount, I guess, that it would cost in a Western country to build those roads. And then he said, this is nonsense. I'm not going to do that. So what did he do? He brought in all the equipment first, and then he took students from the university. They were educated how to use that equipment and how to build roads. And now they are doing it themselves. And just recently, the government signed into law that in the future, there will be for young people a compulsory patriotic year. I know for Western ears that sounds horrible, but here's the thing. They have to build the country from scratch. And he does not want to rely on foreign powers too much.
Those transnational corporations again.
Yeah, exactly. And he also, the government made education now free, not only primary, secondary, including universities. Yeah, all of that is free of charge now in Burkina Faso. But it is his opinion that those students, let's say mental workers, physicists or whatever, he says it will be very good for you if you also learn to do something with your hands. It will serve you for the rest of your life. And that is exactly what they are doing. And I mean, instead of being in debt for many, many years after you have finished your studies at the university, to give 1 year, I mean, that's a great deal, honestly. And it's not that you have to join the military. You actually are working for your own country. Plus, he is encouraging students to take great interest in agriculture. I heard him say, before we cannot secure food independence, let's not even start talking about independence. And that is the complete opposite of what is going on in the West, where we can see a war on farmers. Apart from being a captain in the army, he also studied geology. And after he finished his studies, he joined the army. He fought in UN peacekeeping missions. And then he supported a coup that one of his friends did. But after a while, they saw that they are not doing enough in terms of pushing back the jihadis and that the country was still in shambles. And so then their coup followed. And in September 22, he was announced interim president of Burkina Faso. And so far, it has been very successful. I mean, he's 37 now. He came into office at 34. It has been very, very impressive what he did during those 2 years. But he also rejected loans from the IMF and from the World Bank because he completely understood that that is the model how they keep you in debt slavery forever. And because that always comes with strings attached. And here are the main points. It's called SAPs, structural adjustment programs that the government then has to follow if you take money from those institutions. Number one, cut government spending on public services. Yeah, I mean, a country that doesn't have hardly any public services, where do you want to cut? Second is privatize state-owned enterprises and make it possible that foreign companies export raw materials. And there's the trap. Another SAP is open markets to foreign competition. Yeah, sounds innocent, yeah. And focus on exporting raw materials. In other words, as long as you export your raw materials for pennies on the dollar, we are fine. Forget about infrastructure. Forget about education. We don't give a shit who lives or dies in your country. What we are interested in is raw materials.
And it radically indebts the country. And then one of the facets of that is the opening to foreign companies. In an American example, that would be like big construction firms like Bechtel, Halliburton, etc. So the money that comes into the country as a loan or a series of loans is just turned around and given to these big American transnational corporations or French or German, whatever the case may be. And they build these huge infrastructure projects that have no benefit whatsoever to the people. And it's apt that they call it a SAP program because it very much saps the country of its vital essences.
Yeah. And the problems for Burkina Faso actually started after 2011 when Gaddafi was toppled. A lot of those jihadist armies poured into the Sahel region. Then France sent soldiers and troops allegedly fighting the jihadists. But the country got more and more and more destabilized. And then, of course, a destabilized country will not stand up for itself. And that is also another reason why Traoré said, I think those three leaders from Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, they identified exactly what is going wrong in Africa. And they addressed it. And now Ibrahim Traoré has bad luck that he is the most beloved, the most famous one. And that is why he gets all the brunt. And he's a target. And it is interesting to note, we are recording this on 6th of May. I'm pointing this out because after the failed coup on 16th of April, from what I hear, the plan now is to eliminate Traoré before June 2025. So we will see how that goes. As of now, he is still in office, and we will see if... But, you know, I think because the spotlight has been put on this issue internationally in a lot of countries, and some countries, really Liberia, Nigeria, they actually arrested people for showing up on those demonstrations, on those protests in favor of Ibrahim Traoré. And I know why. Because those leaders, they fear him as well. The majority of African leaders are puppets of the West. They do whatever is expected. But now that we have the internet, Africans, of course, are using social media as well. They have their own podcasts. They are doing shows. They are doing daily updates. What is going on here, here, there, and there? They are no longer in a slumber. We should all remember that 70% of the African population are young people. And they are fed up of living in the rubble. They are fed up. They understand that Africa is rich. But Africa is exploited and they don't want it any longer. So now you have this battle. The battle lines are drawn. Those people that want this model where somebody is really working for the people, that to them Ibrahim Traoré represents, and the old guard that is dancing to the tune of the West. So it will be very, very interesting to see how this development goes. Personally, my attitude is, if your country has gold, uranium, whatever, it is yours. It is yours. It is not France's property or that of the U.S. Nobody should take it away from you.
Even General, Langley?
Langley.
Yes, his comment about how he's using his gold to enrich himself and his cronies, that's none of his business anyway, right? And what's really irksome also is they've kicked the French out. The French just got busted again because this guy posing as a journalist turned out to be a French intelligence asset, right? And like you said, these never-ending efforts to topple him in a coup, assassinate him, etc., to rub salt in the wounds, and I think this is a good idea on Torreira's part, is he's brought the Russians in. He's come to terms with the Russians. The Russians have provided something like 1,700 special forces troops to help train his forces. And America can't complain about that. They do that all the time. One of the primary missions of the American Green Berets is foreign internal defense. They send Green Berets to all these different countries and they train up the security forces. They train the palace guards. They use Delta Force for this as well. That's exactly what the West does. So I see nothing wrong with Traoré bringing in the Russians to help train up his constabulary and his security forces. And you look at the knock-on effect. It's not only Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, but now Ghana is saying, we don't want foreigners coming here, taking all our gold and buying up gold and leaving the country. So they put restrictions on that. Niger has made...
They made arrangements.
They nationalized it. And you see, that's what's really pissing off the West. Because in the past, we've seen, not just in Africa, but in South America, everywhere, basically, where a nationalist leader, whether it was Mossadegh in Iran in 53, nationalizing Anglo-Persian oil, or it was Arbenz in Guatemala in 54, nationalizing the lands owned by United Fruit and other American transnationals. They get rid of these guys. They call them communists back then, which they really can't call them that now because the West is communist. So they really can't do that now. But look what the Russians have did with Niger. The Russians are sending their nuclear engineers and technicians to help Niger develop their own nuclear enrichment capability so they can have nuclear power. And they're helping along with the Chinese. I'm sorry?
Same in Burkina Faso. They work with Rosatom.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. Well, you see, they're actually coming in and they're helping to build infrastructure. And the Chinese would like to do the same thing because it's opposite the model that we've seen from the West for so long of using these transnational corporations backed by CIA, backed by MI6, backed by French intelligence. And then they create these succession movements. They create these rebellions in land that happens to have resources. And in the recent past, and going back decades now, like you pointed out earlier, they just move these jihadists around. They've taken care of Gaddafi, who was one of the best rulers of his people ever. All anyone has to do is objectively study what Gaddafi did for his people. They get rid of him, and now they have all those jihadists, and they just move them around. They rebrand them. They call them Boko Haram. They pretend like they're fighting them, just like they pretend they're fighting Al-Qaeda. I mean, there's people really thinking they're fighting them, but they're, of course, they're actually controlled by Western NATO intelligence. So they're going to try to destabilize the country, continue to destabilize Burkina Faso with jihadists, but they will also use...
Frozen.
Could you hear me, though?
You are a little bit frozen, and your sound is...
Okay, hopefully that will resolve it. Let me see. It looks like I've got a good connection. From what I understand about this Riverside program shoot.
Yeah, and it is recording. Yeah, James, you have to edit that.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I guess you have to edit there a little bit.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. We'll fix that part. I'm sure it's still saved because that's the way this thing operates. But let me just pause and then I can continue my point. Then you can continue.
Yeah, okay.
So that's been the modus operandi for some time now, just moving these jihadists around with the aid of the French, with the aid of Western intelligence. So we're going to see more of that. And now that America is overtly getting involved, AFRICOM, because they don't want a new version of the domino theory kicking in, where all these other African nations get rid of their puppets, and pretty soon he becomes a more than a figurehead. He becomes like this messiah type figure. That's the fear of the West, right?
He already is.
Yeah. So please continue.
You know what I found really great when on 30th of April, you know, I saw the footage from Burkina Faso and hundreds of thousands of people poured into Ouagadougou and, you know, in solidarity with their president, if not millions. It's really hard to say, but it was jam-packed. So, and then followed by Ghana. And other countries, there was no African country, I guess, where there was no protest. And when you search for Ibrahim Traore on YouTube and you type in Traore songs, oh my goodness, you know, I'm not saying there was never a song made about another politician, but it goes on and on and on. Rihanna, Beyonce, even P. Diddy came out with a new song about Ibrahim out of jail. And on it goes. So, and then you find video clips where it says, Ibrahim Traore is a sign of God. Yeah. But what I found very good, that when all those people poured into Ouagadougou, he didn't bathe in the adoration of the people. He did not publicly appear that day. What he did was he sent the prime minister and he addressed the crowd. And I think, you know, that he already gets so much brunt from all the Western nations. And I think it was a smart move, no, not to cement this messiah figure himself. If he had stepped out bathing in the adoration of the people, I liked it. I liked it that he stayed home because it's a heavy burden for him.
Yes, I imagine. I mean, he wants to be paid as a captain. All he wants is for his people to, you know, break free of the shackles of poverty.
I have a couple of achievements he did in Burkina Faso in 2 years. Which is it okay
if please.
I read them? Okay, so Burkina Faso's GDP grew from $18.8 billion, that is, to $22.1 billion. As I said, he rejected loans from IMF and the World Bank. He reduced the salaries, I already mentioned that, of the parliamentarians. He paid off local debts of the country. He established 2 tomato processing plants. Burkina Faso is producing a lot of tomatoes, but because of bad infrastructure, tons of tomatoes went to waste that couldn't get quickly enough to the market or whatever. So now that this does not happen, now they have 2 tomato processing plants where they produce tomato paste and whatever. And that, of course, is not only jobs in that particular facility, but there are thousands of jobs that come after that. You know, the logistics, driving the tomato paste to the supermarket, then the people that stock the shelves with the tomato paste, and on it goes. So that was a very smart move. And that is consistent with his idea. We have to become food independent. Inaugurated a state-of-the-art gold mine to enhance local processing capabilities. So he has banned the export of raw gold. And they built a refinery. And they are processing their gold now by themselves. And as I said, these three countries, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, they are planning on issuing their own currency, which will be gold-backed by the gold of Burkina Faso. Remember, before Gaddafi got toppled, he made the same suggestion at the African Union, a gold-backed dinar for all of Africa, and we know what happened to him shortly after. But this time, and that is what a lot of Africans during the protest said, not this time around, not this, not on our watch. We will not allow another Gaddafi. Hands off Burkina Faso. We will see that. And what they said, if you do that, we will rise. We will rise in a way that you have never expected. What that might look like, I don't know. I have no idea. But I'm pretty sure other heads of state will have a horrible time if that really happens. Then he built a second cotton, turned cotton into T-shirts and so on. Do you know what I mean?
Textile.
I forgot the word.
Like a textile.
Yeah. Textile plants. So, and then he opened the first national support center for artisanal cotton processing to assist local farmers. He banned the wearing of British legal wigs in courts and replaced it with traditional Burkinabe wigs, not wigs, attire. He bought 400 tractors, 239 tillers, 710 motor pumps, 714 motorcycles to boost production. This equipment was given to the farmers. They didn't have to take out a loan or anything. It was just given to them. And they said, okay, and also this student program. A lot of students come from the university and help the farmers, and they learn about agriculture on the ground, and so that they can produce more and achieve the goal of food independence. So tomato production rose from 315,000 metric tons to 360,000 metric tons. Rice production rose from 280,000 metric tons to metric tons. Millet production rose from 907,000 metric tons to 1.1 million metric tons. Yeah, he banned the French military. He banned French media as well. I don't think that will be the case forever, but he is definitely in the process of decolonizing the minds, because he's in his speeches that he gave, I heard him say, there are many people that are slaves in their minds, and it starts there first. And we have to get rid of that mentality. And so the new road constructions, I already mentioned that. He is also building a new airport in Ouagadougou that can handle 1 million passengers per year. And it is expected to be completed this year. Plus, he acquired 15 mobile clinics, and these mobile clinics are now serving in the rural areas that are completely underserved with medical treatments. These buses, these mobile clinics, they can also do surgeries. So that in these remote areas, let's say a woman is about to give birth, that she does not have to struggle, you know, how do I get to a hospital or whatever, a mobile clinic will be somewhere in the neighborhood. Does that sound like a person who is using everything for himself?
Well, the last people to complain about that are the exploitative West. When you see what they've done to education in the West, when you see what they've done to agriculture in the West, one of the first things the communists did, the Soviet infiltration in the 1920s, they deliberately targeted the Department of Agriculture. And a lot of the people that studied the Soviet espionage, especially the Venona cables, the decryptions of Soviet espionage telegrams, they were scratching their head. Why are they making all these efforts to always infiltrate the Department of Agriculture? And while they were infiltrating the Department of Treasury, all these other key institutions, but well, we know why. Because when you control agriculture, you control food production, or you shut down food production. So we see a stark contrast in what they're doing in the West, wiping out all the bee colonies, forcing the farmers to adhere to green sustainability policies, because everything about the West is essentially anti-life, right? So yeah. The last thing they want is for somebody to rise up in Africa, of all places, and do all this. Because think what will happen in Kenya, in Nigeria, places that have long been strongholds of Western imperial control and power. If everyone rose up there and demanded to have the same things that the people in Burkina Faso are having now, that's not going to go over too well. So I could see
that. It is happening.
It is happening. So it was a smart move on the part of Putin and a smart move on the part of Torreira to get into an alliance, a mutually beneficial alliance, because with the Russians there now, they have access to the minerals, but they also provide training and security. So if they attack Burkina Faso, they're going to attack the Russians, which is going to create more problems for them.
Yeah, it is already happening, especially in Kenya. Last year, we saw a huge uprising of the Gen Zs. Now, you know, June is approaching, and the BBC released a documentary. It's called Blood Parliament, because people were shot dead during those demonstrations. And the BBC did different camera angles, and because nobody has been charged so far, no military personnel, no policemen, and they identified exactly through the changes of the camera angle and so forth who shot whom. And that, of course, then the government was very not amused that the BBC released this documentary. And what did the government do? Yeah. They arrested the four Kenyan filmmakers who participated in that documentary. They are free again. And it happened on the day of international press freedom. What better way to celebrate this day by arresting four filmmakers?
The hypocrisy is staggering. So if you look at it from the standpoint of a security issue too, what the Americans and the French are going to have to do, see, a lot of the natives, let's say, that tried to topple Torreira and the coup, a lot of them were army people who were trained in France. Just a classic example of taking people from a host country, bringing them back to your own country, training them, turning them, sending them back to lead a coup or instigate a coup, right? So those people that have gone to France and been trained, they're going to be under suspicion, obviously. So they're going to have to come at him in some other way now. I wouldn't be surprised if they would try some kind of airstrike or a drone strike or something along those lines. I would, if I was Torreira, I would try to get the Russians to bring in an air defense system for protection purposes. And also efforts at destabilizing the economy, ruining the crops, sabotage. We can expect to see that. All the things that they tried against Castro, for example, in the 1960s and failed miserably, they're going to try that again because he sets a bad example as far as Africa is concerned. And the West will start to lose their grip because that's where they get their resources from. And if the Russians and the Chinese move in and they have a mutually beneficial relationship with those three countries, just those three countries alone, as part of the BRICS initiative also, that's going to really throw a monkey wrench into the plans of the West.
Do you remember, it's many years ago, but it was called Confessions of an Economic Hitman by Anthony Perkins. You remember
yes.
that?
Yeah, John Perkins. Yes, good book.
John Perkins, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. But I checked last year and I found it still on YouTube. So if anybody is interested how all the inner workings of that is, yeah, watch that, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Well, he goes into detail about this, where it starts out with the loans from the World Bank and the IMF, and then they put these rules in, like you were talking about, for the structural adjustment programs, and they're very specific. You get rid of trade unions. You not only do you cut down on civil services and public works, no trade unions, anything that can be used to make the country better, they just get rid of systematically. And they ensure that money goes to their corrupt politicians in that country to keep the scam going. And when the time comes for the loans to be repaid, all they do is they just can roll over the loan, right? All they do is they roll them over. And by then, just about everything in that country is being sucked out of it, the resources, everything, leaving the country just with nothing. They call it, shock therapy is what it is, basically. And they do this every country that they have a chance. And that's what John Perkins did. He went from country to country to do all of that. And finally, he had enough. He couldn't do it anymore. And he wrote two books, if memory serves. Well, I think there's a good time for a break. Tell us, our viewers and listeners, Judith, how they could find your channel on YouTube and find your work.
My channel is Night Flight, all in one word. And I'm also on Patreon. I'm on Odyssey. Yeah, and that is how you can find me.
And here we're at the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.